Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
My next guest have written a book exploring this. It's great to welcome Patrick Dunne. He's a co-author of Five Generations at Work, How We Win Together for Good. You're very welcome to the programme, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks, Bobby. Great to be here.
Now, let's look at these generations first. Five generations. Who are these, I suppose, cohorts would probably be the wrong word. Who are these different generations? Maybe you might outline who's who here.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I mean, what is a generation, I suppose, is a good question. And generally, what we think of a generation is people born about the same time, in the same conditions, and have a sort of bond because of the experiences they have at a sort of formative stage. And those experiences can be because of the economic environment, because of the sort of social and cultural context that they grow up in, because of the technological environment that they're in, and of course, very tragically and sadly, conflict. So imagine, you know, that generation growing up around the world at the moment, we're in the conflict zones. And they're usually defined in kind of 15, 20 year kind of spells. Sure. So you've got the silent generation, kind of the pre-born in 1946 group. You've got the boomers, who are probably the most famous generation with the millennials. And they were the kind of 46 to 64. And they were called boomers because there was a massive economic boom after the Second World War and a baby boom. Then the next generation following them were Gen X. They didn't want to be defined by anything. These were the sort of children of the 60s, so they were called X. And then they were followed by the millennials, the sort of from 81 to 96, and then the Gen Z. So the five at the moment in the workforce tend to be, you know, a few silent generation, quite elderly workers, the boomers, the Gen Xs, the millennials, and the Gen Zs, and coming up fast are the Gen Alphas, which, because of population growth in places like Africa, you've got, you know, they will be a very big component of the working population.
Okay. So even if we stand back from it then and we say that, you know, if you look at the fact that an experienced 64-year-old might not have the same ambition and drive as an energetic 30-year-old, are you proposing that we take the best of what these generations actually offer? I.e., people of my generation might be inclined to pick up the phone and ring somebody to get a meeting, or whereas somebody of 22 or 24 never rings anybody, but they might be much more savvy around social media and things.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know who you were thinking of when you were thinking of that 64-year-old, Bobby, but...
Would you believe I am 64?
Quite a few radio presenters who've got bags of energy and drive and are creative. I mean, if you look at the fundamental challenges between generations, they're usually because to do with understanding each other. They're to do with how we communicate with each other. We have different preferences as you've just illustrated. But the main point of this book is actually, I think we're lost in the wrong conversation at the moment globally around the different generations, because it's all about, you know, things like the boomers have stolen our future and millennials are sort of avocado munching and feckless. And none of that really is really right. And what we're trying to say is actually, if you look at the massive opportunity we've got because of the different experiences, different perspectives, different skills that people have of those different generations. You know, you're a very successful businessman. You know, those of us in business, we want to maximize the use of the resources that we have, and we have this tremendous resource. And I suppose what we're saying is, let's look at some brilliant examples. And the book is peppered with examples from across the world of organizations really doing great jobs in terms of combining those talents, combining those perspectives and so on. So, you know, Get those young'uns and old'uns working together.
Well, I often think that if you go into, you know, a retail environment and, you know, you see it more in the States than you do here, but you never see anybody 50 plus working in a retail environment in Ireland, for instance, or you rarely do. And I often think that those people have the service ethic, they have the experience, they're a resource to me that are completely underutilized in terms of bringing their experience, their know-how, and their understanding of a service ethic to be a great asset to retailers. Why don't we embrace that generation more?
I think that's starting to happen, Bobby, because of just a number of factors. One, the shortage of people to do those jobs, but also I think a lot of older people now, you know, they're working longer. Why? Because, you know, for many they have to get the income. Many people don't have the pension provision that they need, so they have to. Secondly, they want to. They've got a purpose in their life. They enjoy it. I mean, I chair an organisation in the UK, the Royal Voluntary Service. We provide a lot of support for people around the country. And I was in Stoke the other day, and we've got an 86-year-old there who works with us. And this guy, he serves people probably the only hot meal they're going to get. And he's dancing around the kitchen. He's training the youngsters. He's brilliant with the people that we're helping. And he's just a sort of, you know, really brings a great vibe to the place. And you know, there was a sort of younger person there, maybe 20, and these two were getting on famously, you know, cracking jokes together. And it was lovely to see that. I think we need to escape the sort of the gravity of stereotypes, as I describe it, with our views of older and younger.
Yeah, and I think there are a couple of things around that, Patrick. I think it's probably just a fact that, you know, everybody thinks that their generation are better than all the others. I think we maybe just take that as a given. And you're right, that's a flawed logic, I think. If you look at things like Jobs for Life, where some of the different generational cohorts would have come from versus, you know, instability, contract employment, 0 hours contracts. They're very different sort of backdrops to your approach to work, aren't they?
Absolutely. Well, my grand lived in Ringsend and didn't really have a lot of education, but was a remarkable woman. And she always told me, you know, don't confuse worrying with thinking, she'd say. And I think we often worry about differences rather than think about how we can maximise the benefit of those. And that goes to your point of, you know, she lived in a world where it was very precarious, in terms of employment in Ireland. I grew up in inner city Liverpool. I was born in Toxteth, and there were no jobs. As a kid, it was very precarious. And then I was very lucky because I was okay at maths and I did quite well. And then I had a very good career. And I was with one company, the longest one, for 26 years. Now, that's unlikely to happen anymore. So the environment is back to being precarious in terms of employment. But you can still make a good career. You can still get a range of experiences in one company if that's what you prefer, you know, as long as it's big and it's got sustained success. So I think it's about making the most, that maximizing mindset of whatever the circumstances are. I mean, the world looks a pretty scary place if you're coming into the workforce at the moment, doesn't it?
It certainly does. So are you sort of professing then that, you know, good practice would be, or best practice would be, that every company embraces all the generations, they pick what they're best at doing, and even if that is somewhat anecdotal, and you try and get the best traits of the way we do things from each generation collectively working together?
Absolutely. That's the big point of the book. It's getting, you know, the best team for the job. You know, as a young manager, I always thought, you know, actually, how can I'm only going to be successful if the people I can get to do this thing with me are the best. And so, you know, you can recruit people, and then you, by developing them, you can make it even stronger. And I think it's the same thing, whether, you know, it's just another aspect of diversity, I guess, Bobby.
Yeah.
You know, the different talents, you want the different perspectives, you want the different characters. Characters often underestimated as a value, as a strength. But you know, again, going back to my grandma's generation, you know, their resilience was just astonishing. Just astonishing. You know, you look at that Irish generation particularly, what they went through, and what they were able to deal with, and their strength of character was just phenomenal.
Yeah. And if you look at, you know, the Irish who went to other places, you know, they really, really arrived with nothing, got stuck in, built major cities, you know, really, really. I always felt that the Irish worked better in other countries than they did in their own.
My mum came over on the boat, literally, from Dublin. And I think, you know, I always tell anyone who's visiting Dublin, go to the museum, you know, go see Epoch Museum and see and hear and listen to those stories. And just think about it for a minute, you know, going on a boat across the Atlantic when it was really sort of a bit dodgy, dangerous then, landing in a place, you've no idea, you don't know anyone, maybe you have some relative, maybe not, and you've got nothing, and you have to make your way and start your life. I mean, that is a phenomenal achievement. And, you know, if you look at that map of the world in the museum that's now, you know, there's green everywhere, and that sort of, you know, the contribution Irish people have made to the world through that immigration has been phenomenal. Business, social.
And I'm getting your sense of pride about your Irishness, Patrick, which is nice to hear. Finally, can you tell us then what companies should be doing, I suppose, you know, in a sort of concise way to embrace what you're telling us in this book?
Yeah, so there's a whole chapter about next generation boards. So these are boards, typically advisory boards. Maybe the chair of it sits on the main board, but you're getting people from that. They're mostly younger generations, but some are multi-generational, and they're thinking about the next generation of the company. And you're getting those very different. So if you've got examples, you know, you've got Gucci, one I chaired in the UK, the EY Foundation, the Financial Times has one. A great way of bringing different insights, different challenges, and also bringing legitimacy. Companies with next-gen boards tend to find it easier to recruit that younger talent because they feel they're being listened
to.
That's one way. Other companies are actually bringing back some retirees to pass on knowledge, to pass on skills, to work on particular projects, that kind of thing. And then you've got companies like LVMH, you know, the very big, large luxury brands business, which has got a multi-generational kind of platform within the business, which is driving huge innovation. So this is a sort of innovative platform where people, no matter what, where they're from in the business, what age they are, can sort of put through ideas and work together on those ideas to turn them into successful businesses.
Yeah, well, look, it's a very provocative book in the sense, in a positive way, that it really, really does make us think about the different generations and how we can all work well and better together for the benefit of everybody, the business and indeed the individual. So Patrick Dunn, the co-author of Five Generations at Work, How We Win Together for Good. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Absolute pleasure, Bobby.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.